This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Everybody, this is another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, and I don't even know what's kind of going. Have you ever had a day, and I'm sure you've just had it because you just had a baby, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. There's been a few of those days.
When did you have your baby?
It was end of September, September 20th.
Okay, is this baby number one?
Nope, number two.
Number two, okay. So you've been through it. Okay,
you've been
through a little bit of it. Dude, not a good time to have a baby.
No, my daughter was born the 18th of October, so.
Okay, so you have one baby, one kid born in late September and the other one mid-October.
Yeah.
Okay, yep. That's your wife, is she a nice person? Sounds like she's trying to send a hint with some birthdays.
Well, it works all good with my job. I'm laid off in the wintertime, so kind of tried to plan it where her maternity leave would end where I'm done with work.
Okay. All right, nice, dude. I think, okay. What do you do for a living?
So I'm a foreman at a concrete crushing company. We heavy equipment operator. So we make aggregates, crush rock, crush concrete down in the Twin Cities Metro. So, and I live about 2 hours north of there. So I'm gone all week for work from pretty much end of March until after Christmas or around Christmas time.
So are you're gone all week long?
I'm gone all week long. Yeah. Our shop is about 2 hours from my house and I work all over the Twin Cities Metro and our shop is North Metro. So we get on some jobs and I'm an hour even every day drive just from our shop.
Okay. So do you stay down there every week? Okay.
Yep. I have a ice castle fish house I stay in.
Okay.
Like a camper or whatever.
So, hey man, I used to live that life, like the hotel life, the on the road life.
Yep.
And this was before kids and I thought it sucked ass. Like, but for me, I was working third shift, right?
Okay.
So I was up all night, then sleep all day. And I did that every day, like 7 days a week when I was doing it. Definitely not a job for a family man, but let's be honest. You got a baby at home and you got a younger daughter. How old is she?
Yep. She's 3.5.
3.5. Okay. And you're gone. I get it. You get like, just like how, like when do you stop working?
Usually Christmas time, December, mid-December.
Yeah.
Is that hard? Weather dependent.
Is that hard being away from the kids that many days of the week?
Absolutely. It's, yeah. I've done this work since I've been 18 years old. So
is it a family business?
Actually, it's a union, operators union in Minnesota here.
And so guys like that, you know, like most people aren't doing that unless there's some extreme, like really good pay and or some good benefits involved.
And both. Absolutely. I mean, to do the exact same job here, 2 hours north of the metro, my own house, the pay difference is like $20-some an hour.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's worth it, I guess. I get 3 months off in the wintertime. So,
yeah.
Try to sacrifice what you can. And then, hunting gets grind time. It gets to be crunch time sometimes where it's like, hey, telling the wife, I'm going to take a week off to not spend with the family and go do some hunting. It's kind of, you know, it can be difficult sometimes, those conversations. But like you say, try to earn those brownie points during the off season.
Yeah, for sure. So you're in the off season right now. All right. So how do you earn those brownie points in the off season knowing that here by the end of March, you're going back to being gone 4 nights a week?
Just family time, man, hanging out with the family, doing what I can, you know, keeping the kids, not taking them to daycare on nicer days. You know, if I'm not messing out in the woods, you know, just spending that family time, going out fishing, going out looking for sheds.
Yeah. Yeah, man, that would, I don't know, man. I'm lucky. Like I look at my job now compared to the jobs that I had back in the day before this, whether it was sitting in a cubicle or, you know, sitting in a cubicle, working third shift in some factory that I absolutely hated. Or, you know, when I was working in the South, I was working for, you know, jobs that were third shift. I got wet all the time and I had to go back between being completely wet to being in a freezer back and forth. And I was working like hours upon hours upon hours. And so, dude, I look back at my life now and there's hard parts to owning your own business, but it's nowhere near the hardness of the job, like the extreme level of what is a hard job compared to what I used to work, dude. Like, so I'm really thankful for that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I wish someday maybe I'll get to that point, but
yeah,
for now I'm just grinding, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I mean, in today's world, that's all you can do.
Well, and right, you know, to get what I have, I got my own piece of property here 2 hours north of the metro. So to kind of get what I have here and have what I have, you got to work for it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So with that said, and like, I don't want to necessarily get into too much politics, but Minnesota, Twin Cities area is a hot point right now.
Yep.
Do you have to drive through or navigate around or work in the same areas that all this craziness is going on in?
Typically not too much, because doing what I do, I'm usually in a gravel pit or even
okay.
We do a lot of like on top of the highway type. We'll tear up the asphalt or concrete, crush it back into gravel, and they'll relay it back out on the road. So typically I'm in more an industrial area. And I mean, our hours, I'm up on the road at 4 o'clock in the morning usually, and back at 7 o'clock after rush hour. So typically, you know, I'm not dealing with too many other people at that time of day.
Gotcha. Okay. So you get to, for the most part, you're avoiding all of the chaos. And then obviously you leave on the weekends and so are you the guy who's working on Friday night? And then at Friday night, you, after your shift, you're driving home?
Yep.
On Friday night?
Yep. Typically, Mike, we'd do like 4 things in 8. So 60 hour weeks.
Okay.
Typically. So 8 hour a day, if we're not at a pit where we can start at 4 o'clock in the morning, Fridays, we'll try to start as early as we can and get out of there as early as we can. So if we can start at 4, be out of there at noon.
Yeah.
So especially during hunting season, that's nice too. Cause like, all right, I'm going to rush home and try to get in the deer stand over all the trail cam pictures I've been watching all week.
Yeah. Long. Right. Yeah. I feel that. All right, cool, man. So Minnesota, one thing I don't ever hear too terribly much. People bitch and complain about the rules and regulations in Minnesota for some reason. And maybe I don't have enough contacts there, but for the most part, are you happy, or is the crew, the hunting crew that you run around with, are you guys happy with the rules and regulations in Minnesota?
Yes and no. It kind of varies per zone. I know like the crossbow thing, they just opened that up for, that's a statewide, and I don't know if they're revoting on that or not. But so now it's a statewide crossbow. Anyone can get one with archery license. And then in my zone, I'm a CWD zone. So it's even a little more. I know a couple of years ago, it was unlimited does. For $2.50, you could buy a doe tag and it was unlimited. So
green
that
light
definitely,
on those. Yeah.
That definitely, when you're trying to build a deer herd and, you know, do quality deer management, that doesn't help either when every property's, you know, blasting and everything. But as far as our rifle hunting in the middle of the rut, I would say is our biggest gripe I've heard from a lot of people and talking to the buddies and whatnot. I mean, especially for bow hunters, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So you would be okay if they said, we're going to move the rifle season back a week or two?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I gotcha. And it always seems to be the bow hunters, obviously, who are bitching and complaining about the, you know, the gun season being in the rut, basically. And then no one else is really complaining about it. So I would love, you know, like I'm a numbers guy kind of, and I would love to see statistics, right? Like everybody who buys a license should vote on whether or not they want. Like if you're an Iowa resident and you buy a hunting license, do you want crossbow season during the archery? Vote yes or no. This isn't a change. We just want to get your opinion on basically polling, right?
Right.
Do you want this? Do you want a rifle season during the rut? When, what dates and things like that, and gather that information and just, I bet you would be pretty eye-opening. I bet you it goes against everything that guys like us would want.
Well, and I know they had, the Minnesota DNR did something like that. I don't know if it was on Facebook through the DNR, or it was a thing that popped up on your phone when you registered your animal, a poll you could take. And they kind of had a comment section on what to do. That was a few years ago, and granted, nothing has happened since. But I know a lot of people have that same thing. If we could just kick our gun season back a couple weeks, and I'm a gun hunter. I have 3 weekends here at my house, so I even get an extra weekend being in the northern half of Minnesota that a lot of the part of the state doesn't get.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay. How many acres do you own?
140.
140. Okay. That's a good amount, right? You mentioned a little bit about it being in the CWD zone. What does that mean? How do you as a landowner manage your property different, or maybe not different at all, with it being in a CWD zone?
I guess for me personally, I don't manage it any different because I'm doing quality deer management anyways, you know, trying not, I don't have a huge deer herd up here, so I try to manage does accordingly. I mean, maybe if it's only taking one or two a year versus, you know, and then trying to let those younger bucks go. And I've, my neighbors surrounding me kind of do the same thing too. And I've noticed even since I've been here, just kind of doing some TSI and general habitat things, the difference in the deer, like those sheds we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just in the quality and the age structure. Since I've been here, I've owned this for the last 6 years.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. I want to get into all that, but before we do, we're going to send a huge shout out to the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. First on the list is Wasp Archery. If you're looking, in my opinion, for one of the best broadheads on the market, go check out wasparchery.com. My favorite head is the three-blade jackhammer. I've been shooting it for well over 15 years, I feel like. And then they have a variety of fixed blade and mechanicals as well. So go check out wasparchery.com. I do have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Vortex Optics. We're getting closer and closer to turkey season. And I personally have put red dots on all of my turkey guns. And I feel like it's not necessarily a game changer because you still got to get the turkeys to come in and in order to shoot them. But if Vortex made a mouth call for idiots, then I would say it's a game changer, but they don't. And so what I'm getting at is go check out Vortex Optics and their full line of red dots that you can put on your turkey gun for this upcoming season. Badass. Go check out vortexoptics.com. Next on the list is Code Blue Scents, real synthetic deer urine, scent elimination products, laundry detergents, body sprays, my favorite, the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit. I will be heading out on a shed hunt, not next weekend, but the weekend after with my son, and I'm going to be doing some property work, moving some trail cameras. I'm going to be freshening up all of my mock scrapes in March to just keep it going, basically. And so if you want to find out more information about their product line, go visit codebluescents.com, discount code NFC. Next on the list is Reveal Trail Cameras. These guys have a brand new, I mean, it was brand new last summer, but it's called the Ultra. Additional functionality, ease of use. You scan a QR code, it automatically connects to the app, and you're getting pictures automatically sent to your phone. So go check out tacticam.com/cameras and play around with the app, play around with the cameras. Dude, badass. And then last but not least, company fullsneakgear.com. All right. T-shirts and stuff. Garrett, talk to me a little bit about, as a property owner every year, and do you solely hunt on, first off, do you solely hunt on your property?
No, I do not. I mean, year dependent, like with the new baby and stuff, I let this last year I gun hunted on my property. Otherwise, I normally gun hunt way up on the Canadian border. That's where I was pretty much raised to hunt up there. Ever since my dad was younger, my uncles and stuff took him up there, and it's like 100,000 acres of state land go up there and stay in campers and stuff. So that's how I learned, grew up gun hunting, and then buddies got me into bow hunting when I was probably 14 years old, and then kind of continued from there. And yeah, doing my job, I started out when I was 18 and working money and family, and finally got a piece of my property that I can call my own, and
yeah,
working on that.
That's awesome, man. And so the gun season kind of growing up was your traditional head north and do gun camp with the boys type of deal.
Yep. State land campers, generators, no cell service, hours on gravel roads, middle of nowhere type stuff.
Okay, cool. And then when you started bow hunting was closer to home.
Yep. Yep,
Okay.
central Minnesota. So where I live now, I grew up about an hour south of where I live now, which is about, I don't know, hour 15 minutes north of the Twin Cities Metro.
Gotcha. Okay. And so talk to me a little bit about when, like, talk to me about turning a dream into a reality, right? Because I'm at this point now where I have three kids, dude. I started the game late trying to collect the money. Land prices seem to only be going up, which means that I need a bigger and then a bigger and then a bigger down payment in order to make something work. And so, and then like the cost of everything is up. So that just, you know, I may be making excuses, but it slows things down for me. Talk to me about the dream of owning land, setting the goal of owning land, and then accomplishing that and what that looked like for you.
Well, don't get me wrong. I still love going up north on state land. You know, it's something that I wished I could be able to take my kids up there someday, just because it is that different experience, you know, in the middle of absolute nowhere.
Right.
But I've always wanted my own land, especially just for bow hunting. Like I always said, if I don't even gun hunt here, at least I got my own spot I can bow hunt, and during the gun season, hopefully make it, you know, like a little sanctuary or something. But with kids and stuff, obviously, I'm going to gun hunt here and not be gone, as I am already gone for work.
Yeah. Yep. So, but talk to me about the goal. Like, how did you set up the goal of, 'cause you can't just go, I'm going to buy land, and then you
Right.
go buy land. There's other things that have to happen between wanting to be a landowner and actually being a landowner.
Just like I said, with the job and the sacrifice, you know, obviously I could work close to home and make lesser money and be home more, but ultimately, like you said, it is harder to get land and it's only getting more expensive. I'd rather grind now, I guess, while I'm younger, and that's what I thought. And I had a house previous to this with 5 acres, and I'm like, I'm gonna keep doing, before I was married, so I'm like, I'm gonna keep doing what I'm doing and keep saving. And eventually, and then when my wife got married, we look and I'm like, I want at least a minimum of 80 acres. And we looked around at some different properties, ended up finding this one, and she's a nurse in town, so regardless of my job, I'm gonna be gone. No matter where we moved, I'm gonna be gone regardless. So, and right here is kind of happy medium for grandparents. My family's about an hour 45 minutes south. Her family's hour 45 minutes north, and she works close. It's not terrible for me. It's mostly highway commute drive, but yeah, it is still 2 hours just to get to our shop.
Gotcha. Okay. How long did you have to save money in order to get what you like till you felt comfortable looking for a new this bigger place?
Well, so we bought this place in 2019. So as the market before COVID and everything, it actually worked out where it was, what I have now has gone up substantially from when we bought it. So I made out decent enough with my old house, and I had said job, and I knew where I was getting into as far as money wise. And I became a reality where I'm like, I think I can actually do this to own my own property. And here we are, you know, 7 years later, and I've been maintaining it, doing all that since, and I can definitely see the difference just in deer quality numbers and habitat wise. And
So what was the time frame? Was it like 5 years? Was it 10 years? Like, how many years did you have to save in order to get this piece of property?
I guess realistically, probably like 4 or 5
Okay.
years. And so I didn't have my eye set on a specific piece of property. You know, where I'm at here now, I'm not in prime Minnesota bluff country or farm or ag land. I'm in north woods, you know, big woods, swamp type hunting. I really don't have any ag up here either. I mean, to buy it exactly something with some ag on it, you're looking at some boohoo bucks. And that's why I live where I live and where I work, just because of the prices of land. My land here, it's fairly wet. It's not completely all cattail swamp, but it's tamaracks and popple trees, a lot
Okay.
of alder brush and willow brush.
Yeah. And so I guess what I'm trying to get is the process of all this. How many years were you shopping for a farm before you bought the, 'cause you said you had a house on 5 acres and then you decided, I want more than this. How many years of saving and shopping around did you do until this one came on the market and you're like, that's the one?
Probably about 4 or 5 years.
4 or 5 years. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Okay. And how many farms did you look at before for this one?
Dozens.
Yeah.
Just as far as, you know, like where my wife wanted to work and where we wanted to live, and grandparents, and having new kids at that time, you know, first time parents. So where did we want to settle in for our forever home type deal? And that
Okay.
was a stipulation. I wanted at least 80 acres, and location, what was on the market and available.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay. And then did you buy that 140 all at once, or did you buy 80 and then add on or something like that?
Nope, I bought it all at once. It
Okay.
was one piece with a house and a shed and a garage, so.
Gotcha. Did you have to do any updates to the house before you moved in?
No, not before we moved in. I'd since done some when we've had a roof replaced, but
Gotcha.
nothing major, I
Gotcha.
guess.
Okay. So bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Troll Co. Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Troll Co. represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Troll Co. has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/chronicles and use NFC 25 for 25% off your first order. Troll Co. for the hardworking American. Summer is officially here. And you know what that means? Long late nights by the grill, weekends at the lake, and hitting the golf course with your buddies. And nothing elevates those perfect summer moments quite like a premium cigar. Whether you're pairing a rich Murado with a cold bourbon after a backyard barbecue or enjoying a smooth smoke on the porch at sunset, Thompson Cigar has you covered. They've been America's humidor since 1915, offering the absolute best selection and prices. Because they have one of the largest humidors in the country, your cigars are guaranteed fresh and delivered straight to your door. If you want to try something new, check out their unique 5-pack fever deals or their value clubs for unbeatable savings and expert curation. Use my code NFC at checkout for up to 20% off your orders of $75 or more. Or visit thompsoncigar.com/NFC and the discount will be automatically applied. Some exclusions may apply. What's that feeling like when you sign the legal papers and the property becomes yours? It's real now. You own 140 acres.
It's amazing. The feeling is even just coming to looking at it and walking the property trails and stuff that the previous owner had set up and just dreaming where a food plot could be. That tree looks awesome in a pinch point, before even purchasing the property. And then when it became reality, it's like, all right, now I can start putting my hands in the dirt and getting to work and start kind of making a mental plan in my head of what can I do where on this piece of property.
Did you hunt did you hunt private ground anywhere else around the area before you bought this piece?
There was a farm that gave me permission to hunt. There's like a half a mile south of my parents' house where I grew up. So I could ride a four-wheeler or take a bike. Even my bow stand there, they let me start hunting down there. But otherwise, no, it was pretty much all public. Anything I
Okay.
could find close to home or, like I said, my annual rifle season trip up north.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Like that's the thing that I'm trying to get to at some point. And I probably need to put a little bit more effort and spend less money on certain things in my life in order to reach that goal. But like someday I hope that I can walk out on a property and go, you know what? If I want to take a bulldozer to that brush, I can do it. If I want to cut down that tree, I can do it. If I want to build a pond or plant grass or do whatever, I don't have to ask anybody for permission. I can do whatever I want on it.
That's funny you say that because my wife, I just bought a skid loader on Trax actually like a couple weeks ago, and my wife was just telling me last night, she's like, I feel like we're gonna own a part-time construction company around here, just random piece of equipment keep popping up.
And then doing projects and things like that. Or if, hell,
Absolutely.
if I just wanted to get a dirt bike and do donuts in the dirt, you can do that. Like that's the, like that, honestly, that's part of the American dream, is to be able to do whatever you want whenever you want to do it.
Yep, I agree.
Gotcha. Okay. Now talk to me about this farm when you bought it and what it was like when you bought it. As far as deer quality and hunting and stuff.
So when I first bought it, was the first year they did the CWD zone on it. So I guess I don't even know what original zone this is in Minnesota. I don't even know the zone number that this is supposed to be, since when I bought it, it's been a CWD zone since.
Yeah.
But okay. That first couple of years, like I said, it was tough, and I actually had multiple encounters with wolves. My very first sit, actually, on this property, I sat on a tree. It was opening morning of bow season. I didn't have any camera intel because we bought it on October 4th, so it was prime bow season to get in and start setting some stuff up. So I found a tree, set my stand up, and actually, opening morning here, I could see silhouettes. I'm like, perfect, here come some deer. You know, there was like four or five silhouettes, just not shooting light yet, but I could see enough. Ended up being a pack of six wolves came in 20 yards right underneath me.
Did you shoot them?
No, unfortunately not. Minnesota, you cannot shoot wolves. They're protected. So
really?
Yeah.
Okay. So that brings up a habitat management thing as far as predator control. Like here in Iowa, dude, it's green light on coyotes, raccoons, bobcats. Like I think bobcats, you have to have a tag. But other than that, it's green light on predators in the state. How do you manage around wolves if wolves are impacting the deer herd?
You really can't, I guess. I mean, try to get some quality cover for them, for the deer, when there is wolves in the area, because as a pack animal, they're not really in the area for very long. It seems like I run a lot of cameras and you'll get them come in for a little while and then they'll move out and you won't see them for a few months or even the rest of the year. And myself, the last like 2 or 3 years, I haven't even seen a pack come through. It's just been more or less coyotes, but I'm sure the deer are definitely pressured just from having them around. I'm sure even I don't get them on camera, they're definitely around, I'm sure.
Yeah. Do you have black bear on your farm?
Yes. Yep. Lots of black bear. They're getting in my garbage all the time up here at the house. We've had them on a ring camera. They'll come right up 5 feet from the house and start tearing into our garbage can.
All right. So that's two predators now. Three, if you want to call coyotes. Four, if you have bobcats.
Yeah, like, and I have all of that stuff up here.
Okay, yeah. So are there seasons for black bear? Do you actively hunt black bear?
Yeah, there is seasons for black bear, but I should have been on the ball when I bought this place and started applying right away. But in my zone, it's a quota zone for black bear. So it takes like 5 years of applying before you can get a license. And I've only got like 3 or 4 preference points. So hopefully this next year, the year after, I'll be able to get a black bear tag. But I don't think it would be very hard to be able to harvest one and get some bait out if a guy were to do that around here.
Yeah. With you being such an avid deer hunter, have you considered ever bringing someone else on your farm to hunt bear just to relieve the pressure, the predation?
I guess I got some friends and buddies up here, and my brother-in-law, he hunts bear every year, but it just depends if they want to come over here and set a bait or not and where they want to put it. If I'm not home, they don't feel comfortable jumping on my four-wheeler to go reset bait or this or that.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Talk to me about what you've done. How many years have you owned your farm?
Since 2019.
Okay. In 19 you bought it. Okay. And so that's 7 years now, give or take 7 years. And talk to me a little bit about what you've done in the past 7 years on your farm to improve the habitat for whitetail deer.
Well, like when I bought it, it was a lot of overgrown alder brush and willow brush, like thick dog hair stuff. I don't even know how a buck would want to walk through it, let alone yourself. So I've just by cutting trails, doing TSI, you know, and then I do have some pine plantation and wet swamp ground where I really don't have to do anything with. I kind of stay out of there, but and then popple and oak thickets. So just hinge cutting, trying to make some bedding areas, which is kind of hard though, because it's like everything's bedding around here with all the brush to try. So I've been lately, now I bought the skid loader with the brush hog on it. I've been trying to clear a lot of the brush up and let whatever natural vegetation, some tall grass and some CRP grow versus all the brush, because that's all my neighbors have around here as well. And I do run about 6-7 acres of food plots too. And up in my area, there's really not too much food
up
here. So.
Gotcha.
Try to give the deer what they can.
Gotcha. So how did you know what you were doing? Are you shooting from the hip or are you talking with a habitat specialist, or do you watch videos? How are you knowing what decisions to make on your property?
Listening to podcasts, I guess when podcasting started to become big when I bought this property, I started listening to that, a lot of land management stuff. And obviously me being a heavy equipment operator helps. rented various types of equipment over the years to, dig drainage ditches or a pond or, make some different areas. So that's definitely helped as far as renting it versus hiring somebody to come in and do it. And then,
Gotcha.
like I said, now I just finally bought my own compact track loader.
Yeah. Okay. All
I'm
right.
curious to see what the summer brings when I can start tearing into some dirt with that.
Yeah, for sure. What about the, like, since 2019, how has the deer herd changed since you've started doing these projects on your farm?
The age class, I can definitely tell. I don't know, the last 5 years probably I've been able to tell just as far as the I'm sorry, Dan.
That's all right. Is that trigger control or is it management? Like
You know what?
habitat management?
It's both. And like I said, in my area here, not having a whole lot of ag, I'm kind of Northwoods. The ag is pretty much an hour south of me. So just the food around, I notice, has been huge. They pretty much any food plot I have, no matter what I plant up here, is gone to the dirt pretty much by the end of rifle season.
Yeah.
So just the food and the TSI and any improvements like that, I guess.
Yeah. And so then trigger control, obviously. I mean, when you say age class, that means somebody's not shooting something if you're getting to
Right.
a higher age class. Is that you? Is that a co-op that you and your neighbors and the surrounding farms have built together?
No, it's not exactly a co-op, but we have a kind of talking to the neighbors. Yeah, going through trail cameras. I got this one. I got this one. And obviously, some fall through the cracks you don't see, but try to let the, I don't know, around here, 130 inch deer is a big buck. So I'll try to let the 100 inch deer go, at least, and try to make get them to 3.5.
Yeah. And then is that difficult? I mean, have you had conversations with the neighbors about what deer to shoot? Everybody's running trail cameras now, right?
Yep.
So there's information out there. It's probably not a secret. Do you have conversations with your neighbors? It's like, hey, listen, you got this guy? Okay, we both have the same deer on camera. Are we going to pass him or are we going to shoot him? Or is it still like individual property owner discretion?
It's pretty much individual
Okay.
property owner discretion, I guess, but just the few people that border my property are, we're all kind of on the same page where if it's a going to be a nicer deer next year and it's like, all right, it's just a basket 8-pointer, 100-inch 8-pointer, probably let him walk and see what he can
Gotcha.
be next year. But that's a double-edged sword too. I've done that before when I first bought my place. I let probably a 125-inch 6-pointer walk by me. It was a giant of a six. And like, I'm going to manage my property and let him walk by at 40 yards and never saw that deer ever again.
Yeah. And that's the risk, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's the same thing when, so I hunt a fairly good chunk of property. It's the farm I've been hunting the longest in Iowa. I think I got access to it in 2007. And man, I passed a lot of deer. And those deer, not every year, but some years, those deer would get shot. The deer that I passed would get shot by the other group of bow hunters that have access to the farm just because they're different. So they have different goals, right? So, I used to be like, I passed that buck, I'm pissed. And now I'm just like, it kind of is what it is at this point for me. I'm happy for them. I'm glad that they got to, with their time off and the time that they spend in the woods and if that's what they want to shoot with it. That's great, man. I don't care. I used to get worked up about it and now I don't care anymore, man. Congrats is what I say.
When I first bought this property too, I was kind of that way, like obviously I want to manage my property for big bucks. Well, you can't kill big bucks where big bucks don't live either. The area I'm in is not known for growing 150, 160 inch deer.
Yeah.
So you got to keep that in the back of the mind too. Like I want to let all these deer grow, but it seems like they get to that, 130 range and they kind of disperse and I don't know where they go. They don't hang out here. I'll get them. It's like, if I can get that buck to hold on one more year, he could turn into something special, but it seems like they every year they get to that point and then I don't know where they go if they get shot and I just don't hear about them or
Yeah.
where
It
they disperse
probably,
to.
my guess is, and you probably have more insight on this than I do, but my guess is everybody, including you and around you, they're all looking for the same thing. And then there's one person who is not. They shoot the deer. They shoot the magical 3-year-old, right? They shoot that 3-year-old that everybody wants to make 1 year, and it never happens, right? They never, one's not squeaking through
Right.
With the population of hunters in the area. But then there's a scenario kind of like what you got going on this year, right? Like you, it sounds like you have a deer that has squeaked through the cracks. He's made it through the cracks, right? And so first off, how many years have you known about this buck?
So I have physically seen him on my personal cameras for 2 years. So I've been hunting him for the last two, but I know he's been on my property and the neighbors for the last three.
Okay. All right. And then do you have conversations with your neighbor about this buck?
Well, so last year when I first saw eyes on him, it was third weekend of gun hunting and I saw him for about a second. It was enough to, I got my scope on it and I'm like, okay, there's a buck. Didn't know how big it was. And then as soon as I saw it was him, I saw him for a split second and he was gone. I started texting the neighbors around and I'm like, who around has seen this buck? Here's what his characteristics is. He's a really unique type of deer. And sure enough, the neighbor had him the year before in February on camera, still holding on to antlers.
Okay. All right. And so he's a really good buck. I'm going to pull up the pictures here of the antlers that you have. It looks like he's got a ton of mass on him, right? You were lucky enough to find the sheds this year.
Correct.
Okay. So this deer has squeaked. It looks like he's made it through. He squeaked through multiple years now.
Multiple years, yes.
Multiple years. What do you attribute that to? Him still being alive when other deer aren't?
It's just the terrain around here. I mean, it's flat. There's no hills around here, but there's big swamps and there is thick swamps. So he could go. There's a section of state that butts up to mine. It's 160 of landlocked swamp. And I don't know if there's 10 acres you'd want to try to walk through. So I don't know if majority of the time he's living out there or where he goes, because I only get him the last 2 years after the first snow of the year.
Okay. So he's consistent after the first snow of the year.
Yeah.
Then so, he pops out.
Last year when I first saw him in person, and I didn't even know about this buck, it was third weekend of gun season, which was be about the weekend before Thanksgiving in my area here. So.
And it snowed.
Yes. And that's when I saw him. And then I consistently the whole rest of that year got pictures of him until I took my cameras down around New Year's after season closed.
Gotcha. All right. So. Do you have a gut feeling where this buck lives, and is that area on your farm?
No, and that's what bothers me about this deer. He's like a ghost. I don't know where he lives or where he goes. So fast forward to this season, I put my cameras out in mid-July, and I run 13 cameras on my farm here on 140 acres. So I feel like I got a pretty good area covered. Considering, but I got a picture of him the day I put my cameras out in the middle of July. One picture, daylight in the morning, the day I put cameras out. And then after that, I did not get a picture of him until third weekend of muzzleloader this year, which would be mid-December. So in that whole middle frame, I have no idea where that deer was or what he was doing.
Okay. All right. And so you don't know, like, have you tried to triangulate his position about where exactly he's coming and going on your farm with trail cameras?
Yes, and I pretty much have it narrowed down to where he's coming and going now. And as far as where I found those sheds out of where he's been bedding at the last 2 years, what I think on my property. And my neighbor has got pictures of him, but out of my 13 cameras on mine, I only get him on one camera. He's in the smallest corner of my farm.
Okay. All right. Have you thought about bringing more trail cameras in to really hone down his movement?
I have, but it kind of where he comes in on that corner, it pinches down into a small section of state, and then it goes on to my neighbors. And I know that's the only camera he's really gotten pictures of him too. And that butts up to the Mississippi River. So I don't know if he's running up and down the river or crosses the river. That, I mean, who knows?
Yeah. Okay. So this is where, last year he was holding all the way until February, correct?
Yes.
Did somebody find his shed antlers?
No, nobody did find his sheds last year.
Okay. You found his sheds this year. When did you find his sheds?
It was mid-December 7th. No, 10th. December 10th. Because I was actively hunting him yet December 7th. I recall, and it was negative 22 degrees, but I had him on camera daylighting still. So it's like, this is the coldest I've ever been out hunting, but I'm gonna try. And I was still at work that time, so here I'm watching this deer daylight all week long, and I'm gone working in the metro away from home. Meanwhile, this deer's 200 yards daylight behind my house.
Yeah. Did that concern you at all, him dropping in December?
So I saw him in person out of my work truck one Friday coming home, and he had a pretty good limp to him. So
Okay.
I kind of attribute him dropping that to that injury, but I don't know if he was injured from the gun season or he got hit by a car, being that he's known to cross the road just by my camera and the neighbor's camera. So that's what I attribute to him dropping so early, I think.
Yeah. When was the last picture you had of this buck?
When I took, so he's got a characteristic to recognize him. He's got a stub tail. It's like a cotton tail. I don't know
Okay.
whatever happened to him, if coyotes tried to get him long ago or what. But so after he dropped his antlers, I took my cameras down on the new year and he was still around. So
Okay,
I
so
don't
he's
know.
made it. He's made it like
Through
through.
the gun season, the archery season, everything. He's, yes.
Okay, all right. This is where it gets fun, right? I know some big time landowners who have a lot of resources, and they will do the craziest shit you've ever heard to manipulate one buck to do one thing, whether that's tear out an entire grove of trees to plant a food plot or to plant new rows of trees to dictate his movement, to create a brush pile somewhere, put in a pond, put in water. This buck, if you like, based off of where he's at right now, what would you say he's would score, and what do you expect his age to be? Best guess.
So we put a tape on his antlers and just doing a 14-inch inside spread because his main beams almost came around and touched each other. But we taped him out at 157. That's nothing
Okay.
official. But
Yeah.
so, and
That's a
for
great
that
buck.
deer is like, oh, around here, I'm like, that's just a complete anomaly, you know, to have a deer that big. I mean, like I said, 130-inch deer, I'm putting it on my wall all day around here.
Right. So, do you have any plans, or are you starting to mix the ideas in your brain about what you're going to do on your farm to try to get this buck for next year?
I have, but yet a part of me wants to say, do I just kind of, I know where his bedroom is now after finding those sheds. It's like, do I just kind of want to stay out of there? He feels safe there. He was daylight pretty much after I got him on camera. He was daylight almost every single day. So at the same point, it's like, do I just leave it alone? He likes it. He feels safe there, and I'll just kind of deal with it next year and see what, try to put some more cameras in that same area and some different spots where hopefully he doesn't see them and go from there, because that's almost what I think would happen this year when I got that one morning picture of him the day I put cameras out. Did he see that camera and just completely avoided him and he's been living on my farm all summer long? Or did he actually, does he move to a different area? Maybe he swims across the river and doesn't come back until the river freezes over and walks across. I don't know.
The Mississippi River?
Yes, it's
That's
only 400 yards across from my driveway is the Mississippi River.
blows my mind, dude. That blows my mind that that could even be a theory. You know what I mean? Like, but I've heard of deer just up and disappear. And I know deer travel probably further in Kansas than they do other places, maybe. I don't know. But my uncle, he was hunting a particular buck. He ended up killing this buck, and he scored 211 inches down in Kansas. But he found the sheds the previous year, and then the next, like in, he was hunting this deer. I don't know. It was like in this one farm with a bow, and then 2.5 miles away is where he found the sheds, the shed antlers, right?
Wow.
And so then that buck then came back in that next fall into that little woodlot, and he ended up killing him. So it's crazy. It's to think, but it's not crazy actually.
Right.
That's a
Yeah.
bad way of putting it,
Like
but
that's just a thought. Is he crossing the river? Like I said, maybe he's just avoiding every camera and he's been on my property all along. It's so thick and gnarly and brushy and tamarack swamp. He could skirt that camera anywhere, even with 13 of them on 140 acres. It's
You're
a
right.
needle in a haystack. So
Right.
it just
So,
makes me think that I got that one picture of him the day I put cameras out and then nothing. It makes you wonder.
yeah. So, let's say this buck is back. Let's say Maybe you put some cameras out again after we have this conversation and you start to identify his winter pattern. Maybe you throw some mineral out. I don't know if you can do that, or you start to get velvet picks of this buck. Like, do you have a game plan? Like, any good hunter who's crazy about this stuff is thinking about this all the time. Are you thinking about ways right now to try to kill this buck?
I've been thinking about ways how to kill this buck since I knew about this buck on my property to have him around. But to find those sheds was huge, just an intel as far as like where he was living. Because this year when I was actively hunting him with the snow and stuff, where his bedroom was, I could see the stand I was in. It was probably 60 to 100 yards away. But with the crunchy snow, I guarantee he was hearing me come and go, because you'd see me walk by on the camera at night when I'd get down, and 20 minutes later after I walk by, here he walked.
Dude, I wonder if he knows you. Like, he knows your patterns. You know what I mean? Like,
well, in with the snow like that, it's hard to get in anywhere quiet. You know, when it was 22 below and there's 8 inches of snow on the ground, every step you take is just a loud crunch.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially if he's bedding, you know, 100 yards from the stand, he's going to hear that and just wait until I'm gone.
Right. And this is, and you're thinking that next year, this is a gun season buck, maybe.
Or like if he slips up and I can get on him early, I know. And if he's around and he is in that same piece of woods he's been in early season, I'd like to jump on him early. But yeah, I don't know. The last 2 years, historically, it seems like he doesn't even come around until after the gun season.
Yeah. So you don't have any October pictures of this buck? No.
Nope. None. Nope.
Okay. All right.
And I have him, like I said, that once in velvet, and one neighbor had him once in velvet, and that was it. Other than that, no one around knows where this deer goes. His nickname is the Ghost, because no one knows a lot about him.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel that the other landowners who know about him now are going to be actively making moves on this buck this upcoming year?
In my area, I don't think so. If my neighbors, you know, they're more big gun hunters, they'll sit in their heated box stand, not get too mobile, you know. So as far as getting aggressive at him, I feel like I got a pretty good chance. Just even as far as my property, they don't really plant food plots or do any TSI or anything like that. So
gotcha.
In my area, I kind of got the niche property where it's different than everybody else's in the surrounding area. And that's what I've been trying to do for the last 6 years, is make mine different. I just ordered 500 pine trees to get planted this spring. So, and the previous owner had planted 15,000 pine trees on my property. So it's got some pine plantation as well. So I kind of want to keep that going. And I enrolled, actually 2 years ago, I enrolled this property into a tree farm, the Minnesota Tree Farm Association.
Okay. So you're going to have people in there cutting trees?
Or I can do it myself. Maybe I'll be able to start my own business and kind of go slow as that, as harvest trees or Christmas trees or things like that.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. Well, that's cool, man. I'm jacked about this for you now, because it seems like most of the time when we tell these stories, there's guys who have already been hunting this buck. Like, they've had encounters. Their plan is in process. But to me, this story is like at the very beginning, right? Like,
right.
It's, even though, what did you say? He's 157, but you're guessing he's a 5-year-old. He looks like he's got real good mass, dude.
Yeah, 5 or 6. Like I said, when I first saw the picture of him, when he wasn't, I didn't even know he was on my property. I thought he was a 4.5 even then. So he could potentially be 6.
Yeah. Okay. Well, either way, he's going to come back in hopefully prime shape this next year. He gets over his injury, whatever that could be. Have you guys had a harsh winter up there this year?
We had some real cold snaps where I hit 30, 40 below for a week or two, but the snow has been minimal.
Yeah.
It seems like we'll get 6-8 inches or a foot, and then it'll be 40 degrees the week after, and it's all gone anyway.
Hey, dude, that's good for big bucks, dude. Mild winters means next spring's growth is, and they're going to come off of a, you know, not as depleted, a little more healthy. And
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I hope that he blows up this year.
Yeah, I hope so too. I've been looking at, you know, trail camera pictures, obviously having the antlers in my hand to tell, like, has he gotten bigger since last year? And it seems like the last 2 or 3 years, he's pretty much stayed about the same.
Okay. Okay. Well, even if he drops down 5 inches and he, or 7 inches and he's 150, it sounds like in your area, that's still a prime buck, dude.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm stoked. I'm hopefully get cameras out here when it warms back up and even be able to identify him with that tail to just make sure he's still alive, because with the me being in the CWD zone here, I can't exactly just be going throwing out feed and try to help him through the hard times when it's 40 below for them 2 weeks, you know.
Yeah. The last question I have is, do you have a doe group or two on your 140 anchors that are how do I, what's the word I'm looking for, are patternable?
Yes, I do. I have several that I have gotten patterned where they bed and where they like to come from.
Yeah, and that's going to help you out. You know that just as well as I do, right? So I'm hoping, dude, I hope all of a sudden you have this giant rub in your front yard on some tree and you know it's him. He's starting to mess with you. Just mock you, right? One day before season, as you're pulling out to go to work on like some Sunday night or Monday morning, there he's standing in your driveway. He's just like, he's taunting you. I hope that happens. Yeah.
No, you can't get me for a week.
Yeah, exactly. I hope he's taunting you, but then I hope you win the battle at the end, dude. So, dude, thanks for a fun conversation. I really appreciate it. Good luck this upcoming season, man. I know once you find the sheds, like I've found some good sheds before and I've been obsessed with whatever buck I'm holding going, dude, it would be awesome to shoot this buck. So I hope you're able to connect on the ghost and we can have another podcast when you do, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope to get on them this year and definitely I'll keep you updated.